Support for Tested comes from Duke Health, reminding listeners that COVID-19 vaccines are safe, effective, and can protect individuals and others from the virus. Together, communities can end this pandemic. Find sites for a free vaccine at DukeHealth.org.
This is Tested from WUNC, a look at how we're responding to the day's challenges in North Carolina and the South. I'm Will Michaels. At this point in the pandemic, healthcare workers across the country are arguably under more pressure than ever. Some are getting sick themselves or burning out and leaving.
We're hurting right now for staff, which I felt like didn't really happen before.
UNC ICU nurse Jenny Cherry spoke to my colleague Jason DeBruin this week.
You put so much of yourself into these patients and so much of your time, your emotional health, your mental health, all of it, is taking a toll because you're putting so much of yourself into taking care of these patients and fighting for them.
The goal is really just to say that level of compassion because it's so widespread at this point. Many of us are now, because of how prevalent it is, are getting sick. And so it's just a different experience to have had that with your, potentially with your patients.
Dr. Adia Ross is the chief medical officer at Duke Regional Hospital. Healthcare workers there and at hospitals across North Carolina are taking care of a record 5,000 people with COVID-19. That's 1,000 more than the previous statewide record set about this time last year. But there are signs that the number of infections, both in and outside the hospital, could turn for the better soon. While new cases are still high, they're down significantly from a peak about 2 weeks ago. And we know that hospitalizations and deaths usually follow the case trend weeks later. And in the Duke University Health System, where Dr. Ross works, nearly 400 employees were out of work Wednesday due to COVID-19, but that's down from almost 700 people 2 weeks ago.
It's about really reflecting on the teamwork that we do have, the ingenuity that we employ every day to still provide that same quality care and being okay with that. I think we're doing the best we can. I think what is important for people to realize is that, there's just kind of this cumulative effect of the pandemic. And with each surge, I think it's, health systems in general have less reserve. I feel like as far as our staff and other things, given that, we're had prior to this some shortages in nurses, and now our workers have been getting sick. There are other things such as a blood shortage that are adding to things. And so in addition to, yes, Omicron, thank goodness for the vaccine, probably people aren't as ill, but they're definitely because of how prevalent it is. It's caused the surge in hospitalizations that was the highest it's ever been. And I think it's just hard to kind of continue business operations and do meet all the customers' needs and kind of continue to soldier on during this pandemic.
So, we can report that there are 5,000 people in hospitals and understand what that means explicitly, but most of us aren't inside of a hospital on a daily basis seeing what it does to staff. So I'm wondering if you can just talk about a conversation or maybe an interaction that might illustrate that impact better.
Yeah, I think it's just the daily conversations that we as leaders and also as providers and nurses have with each other. I mean, I think we're always trying to balance the need to take care of those COVID patients right now and the need to take care of patients such as someone who has a surgery coming up this week. We have to kind of manage that process and figure out, okay, well, can this person have the surgery? What are our COVID numbers looking like right now? We have to take care of the patients that need us right now. Not that we won't be able to take care of your surgery, but we may have to delay that. And I think given that we love to help people and we don't want to ever disappoint, I think having to make those adjustments can be very psychologically hard, and just having to coach each other and say, look, we're doing the best we can today. And, you know, we're making things work. We are still providing high quality care in the circumstances. And, you know, we may, because of the surge, you may not be able to get someone home as soon as you thought, because the resources in the community may be tied up. Because, you know, a nursing home or home health is not available at this time because they themselves are dealing with staffing shortages. But we show up every day and we do our best to take good care of patients. It's so interesting how I think we want people to get vaccinated. We don't want to shame people. But how do we compassionately understand how people can go through? Because many of us as physicians, this is probably one of the first times, other than the flu, that and nurses, that we have maybe contracted something from a patient, or, you know, we've never really had that kind of experience, because most of the things we take care of, it's something that is internal to your body, but not something that I also could experience with you. The goal is really just to say that level of compassion, because it's so widespread at this point that, you know, and the vaccine, the goal is that twofold thing, which is lack of hospitalizations and death, and decreasing transmission. And many of us are now, because of how prevalent it is, are getting sick. And so it's just a different experience to have had that with your, potentially with your patients.
So to be clear, you're still considering non-essential procedures on a case-by-case basis?
I think we're in, you know, doing kind of like how I would say, when we look at our cases and try to decide which ones are most important to get done immediately and not. We've always kind of been doing that. But I think, and, you know, and if there's an emergency, we definitely can still take care of that. And for most things that are urgent, we can take care of it. It's just a matter of the timing. You know, we may have set you up for one day and we may have to tell you that, given, you know, the circumstances today, we may have to push it off, but we're always in that process of trying to figure out how we can accommodate things. But yes, we are in that process where every day we're looking at the amount of staff we have, our COVID numbers, and trying to figure out how we can manage all of it. But I think we actually do a pretty good job of figuring that out. It just may mean that there are some delays, and I don't think we're alone in that across the country.
Let me shift to something that I think is a little more hopeful, because there are indications that the other side of the Omicron surge isn't as promising as we keep hearing from, say, Dr. Fauci, who thinks that the Omicron surge might peak or will have peaked by next month.
You know, I think we are hopeful. I mean, I think our numbers are still pretty high, but they appear to be plateauing. And so we're hopeful. Of course, hospitalizations kind of and deaths kind of lag behind kind of how we are doing as far as infection rates. But I am hopeful that we get through this surge. And I guess the thing that we're also just employing everyone is saying, okay, we got through this one, but we still need to remain vigilant. We're thankful in this area that we have access to the vaccines, and still a large percentage of our population has gotten vaccinated. But what's coming next is what we're continuing to think about. And so those decisions that we're making about whether to get vaccinated or to get boosted, if you're eligible for those things, really determine how the future continues to go. And I think that's where we just want to continue to tell the public, yes, I mean, this wasn't quote unquote as bad individually for people, but because of the large infectiousness of this particular strain, you know, it is stressing our healthcare system. And we do have these shortages that are still going on as far as staffing and other things. And so each time this happens, you know, it puts us at a different set point. So I still want to encourage people to get vaccinated and get boosted, because that is going to help us hopefully after this surge. And it would be great if this is the last major one and we shift from being pandemic to endemic. That would be great. But that's all really contingent upon us working together and all of our behaviors.
You talked about COVID-19 becoming endemic, and we've started to hear that term more and more lately. Whether or not it may be too early to be talking about that, or whether it's an appropriate time to talk about that, when it does happen, I know there's not one metric, but are there specific indicators from where you sit in the hospital that you would look at and say, okay, there's a sign that it might be becoming endemic?
That's a good question. You know, I'm not 100% sure how to answer that. I was just thinking, you know, when I think about the surge in the flu, or we expect that every year, and how it's season, the seasonality of it probably would make me think that maybe we become endemic. You know, we may have a low level flu in the fall, but it really kind of ramps up in the winter because people are inside. So I think, you know, kind of going to those things where we can kind of predict the seasonality of it probably would make me think it's more endemic. But that's a good question. It's hard to really say. I mean, I think we're all hopeful that we'll get there. And I do believe we will get there as more and more people become vaccinated. It's just a matter of when and how quickly. And I think that's all based on a lot of it on our collective behaviors about getting to that next phase.
Yeah. And maybe, I guess, coming up with a plan for, and correct me if I'm wrong, but coming up with a long-term vaccination plan, maybe one that, as I think some of your colleagues at Duke said on a briefing the other day, one that might combine, say, the seasonal flu with the COVID vaccine, put them both together, and maybe that gets it out more easily.
That would be awesome. You know, I still am hopeful. I mean, you know, I think it's important for the public to know kind of where we are, and that we are, you know, hospitals and health systems, the workers are really tired, but we're really committed to things. And we're also, we show up every day still hopeful that we're going to, you know, get our community through this and we get to those new phases. And that would be wonderful if we could combine, you know, the flu and the coronavirus in a vaccine to kind of have a one shot. We also need to destigmatize getting it because, I mean, I think given how infectious it is, it's one of those things that I think a lot of people are going to get it. And no matter what you're doing the right things. But again, going back to like, what is the goal of the vaccine? You know, the same thing with the flu, right? There's some years where the flu is like right on target. We got the strains right. And then there are other years where, you know, it's not. And so that really takes into account the two purposes of the vaccine, the flu and the COVID. One is to prevent hospitalizations and death. And the other one is to prevent transmission, right? And so sometimes, depending on the strains and how we get those right, we can't always prevent transmission, but we can try our best to eliminate deaths and hospitalizations. And those are twofold, whereas everybody tends to focus on, well, I'm safe, I'm not going to get it. Well, you might.
Yeah, I mean, it affects everyone a little bit differently. And it's hard when we don't know everything about, when we still don't know everything about the virus, right? I got COVID about 2 weeks ago, and I assume it was Omicron, and I vaxxed and boosted, and still, I mean, it still hit me pretty hard. I didn't need to be hospitalized, but I mean, you know, there were 2 days there where I just was delirious on painkillers and you know, NyQuil basically. But, you know, even with being vaxxed and boosted, I didn't quite expect that big of an impact.
Yeah, it's really hard to predict. And I think, you know, thank goodness, I'm glad you're okay. But I think that's the thing that I always think about when I hear those stories is I'm like, oh my gosh, well, how bad would it have been if you wouldn't have been vaccinated?
Right. That's exactly what I thought the entire time is like, oh my God, this would have, I shudder to think what I would have felt like if I hadn't have been vaccinated.
Yeah. So, and I think, you know, and I think the question would be, did the vaccine do what it's supposed to do? And I would say in many ways, yeah, because you had a relatively mild case. And yes, it would have been nice if that particular that you wouldn't have gotten transmitted, but you are back to work, you know, and you're able to still provide for your family and do the things you need to do. And so, you know, how do you really talk about how, wow, like, what were you feeling? Like when you were talking, I was thinking, gosh, like, I wonder what he was feeling and, you know, how much worse it would have been. And those have been the conversations I've been talking to others that have gotten it as like, you know, people being very thankful because they were kind of surprised at how they felt and were just thankful that they didn't have to be hospitalized.
All of this talk about endemic might make us feel better about the situation, but for right now, it sounds like it's still taking it one day at a time.
It is. It is one of those things that we want to think about because it gives us hope to think about going into that endemic phase. But, you know, we're just trying to get through what we're dealing with now.
Dr. Adia Ross is the Chief Medical Officer at Duke Regional Hospital. Thanks for listening to this episode of Tested from WUNC. I'm Will Michaels.